What I've also noticed is when you're holding up the fish and your face is...
Join us for part two of the American Carper podcast with Paul Cioka.
If the fish is a little bit forward, a lot of the times it will actually focus on the fish.
But you don't see it change. That's pretty interesting. You don't see it change though, Paul. That's the thing. I mean, the tracking on that thing, I was looking at it, you know, from a technical standpoint, I'm looking at it and going through the technical side of it, and I'm like, he's either got another person there who is just, who is a professional, you know, camera, you know, filmmaker and cameraman that knows how to pull focus, or that camera that he is using has the most incredible professional auto tracking and whatever the hell it is. I got to get one. And every single individual in North America and Canada that wants to shoot and document needs to get one as well. So yeah.
And it's unreal.
Yeah,
it really is.
That was incredible. And, incredible. You
know, I mean, if anybody wants to get into it, they don't have to go to that camera. I mean, that's a very expensive camera.
It is.
There is another option, the A7C, for example, which is half its price, has the same autofocus system.
Yeah, gotcha. That's a great point. But they, I mean, you're right. Though Sony have just, and I think I saw recently that Nikon and Canon have come out with some mirrorless things. But yeah, they just completely nailed it with that camera. Now let's talk about. Because the movement, you know, obviously there was some, it's not like everything was just, you know, a stand, a set shot. There was some decent movement. So are you using any gimbals or any other equipment, or was it, is the auto adjustment on the camera so good that you can just literally move with your hands? Are you using gimbals at all?
Yeah, it was shot on a gimbal, and the main reason for the gimbal is that other people are using the equipment.
Yeah,
and if I'm no pro. I don't shoot handheld. I find it very difficult for me to control the micro movement.
Yeah,
especially if you are shooting at. A medium focal length.
Yeah.
So the gimbal is a no-brainer. I don't think I could do without one, really.
And what did you use, may I ask? What type of gimbal? What brand? What was it?
So I've never used a different brand, but I've always stayed on the DJI brand of.
Yeah, they do some great gimbals. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have the drone from DJI, so. Yeah. That was the first thing I got. It was one of the first things that I thought I needed to get into filmmaking was a drone. It was really funny because it couldn't be, you know, farther from the truth, but it was what I needed personally, but yeah. You know, to take that plunge, you know, to take that leap.
Yeah.
But yeah, DJI makes some great drones, even introductory drones, like at a few $100. And yeah.
Okay. So you use the drone, you use the gimbal. Let's talk lenses. Did you use any prime lenses, or did you just use the lens that comes with the Sony, which I would imagine is a, you know, is a zoom lens?
I'm not a fan of kit lenses. I love primes myself. I've always been kind of a prime guy, although I do have one zoom lens. So I think I have four lenses now that I use regularly and one zoom. And the primes that I have are a 35mm, a 20mm, and a 55mm.
Okay. What did you use all three, or did you use one more than the other for shooting Prairie Banks?
The majority of the film was on a 35mm.
Okay.
And that was the main cam, so to speak. And then for all the B-roll and the shots where I was baiting and anything that's zoomed in a little bit, you can see that the focal length is quite quite higher or further. That one was a 70 to 200.
Okay. All right. And are they all Sony lenses?
No. And I only recently started using third-party lenses because of the great reviews I've been reading about them.
Yeah.
Up until recently, or maybe like 5 years ago or so, the autofocus performance on a lot of these third-party lenses was atrocious.
Yes, agreed.
Or the compatibility issues and whatnot. But yeah. Because I guess I use Tamron and Sigmas,
okay.
But I do have Sonys as well, so I'm a bit all over the place. But they all function more or less the same. I can't really fault a third-party lens anymore, as you may recall. Like a few years ago, if you got a third-party lens, you'd always have to have some compromise.
Yeah, you would, and I mean, it's all down to the glass in the lens. But I think one of the biggest takeaways from what you just said was, is there any type of adapter that you need for the Sony to use a third-party, or is it, you know, were you able just to use a Tamron or a Sigma just directly into the shell of the camera?
You don't need any adapters.
Excellent.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent, because on a lot of the other cameras you do, you know, you'd need an adapter, special adapter to take a, you know, if I'm shooting a Nikon camera with a Canon lens, I need a special adapter to be able to accommodate it. So, major thumbs up then, obviously, on the usability of that Sony. So I'm presuming, obviously, gimbal and tripod, you know, and you're pretty much set there, which is incredible. What would you say, before I ask you this question, I wanted to ask about the low light, shooting in low light levels with those cameras, camera and the lenses. What's the, because you didn't, there was no issues. Did you have to use any major lighting or anything for stuff in the, you know, in lower light, or did the lenses handle it?
You know what, the Sony sensors are something else when it comes to low light. Obviously the Canon counterparts as well. I think the R6 now or whatnot from Canon also has amazing low light performance, basically all modern sensors. But no, you know, it was actually scary at one point, because Ryan was filming me as I was bringing in a fish, and you can actually hear him saying on the camera, "You guys may not notice, but it's really dark out."
Right.
and that's because what he was seeing on the screen was lighter than what he could see with his eyes.
Yeah.
If you could imagine that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah.
Excellent. And what would you say, are the biggest mistakes that people make when filming? And this is an education moment. This is because we've all made them, you know, because we've all made them. But what would you say the biggest, so anybody who wants to start documenting, you know, what would you say some of the biggest mistakes to watch out for? I've got a couple, but I want your input.
You know, it's very subjective, or some of these might be subjective, so I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to upset anybody.
No, it's just an education. It's just how we can all learn, you know, we can all learn from each other.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of the mistakes I see is people investing in cameras or whatnot and just negating the audio side.
Right.
That is one of the biggest things that you notice right away is whether it's wind noise or whether it's, you know, audio that you can't make out. And I identified this very soon or very quickly in my videos. I had my first videos, the audio was horrible.
Right.
And so I guess the biggest mistake is not being critical of yourself. I think that's one of the biggest things that you may get wrong. If you're not critical of yourself and all your videos look and sound the same and you're not really making any progress.
Right. That's an excellent point. Really good point. And in regards to that, what did you use sound wise? You using lavaliers that you're micing up, or are you using like a Rode mic, or what are you using?
So I have both shotgun mics and lav mics. I should have used more lav mics when it was windy.
Yeah.
But this is kind of the problem when you're fishing
and filming.
And filming.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're never sitting down.
It's hard, Paul, because don't you find when you're fishing and filming that you're you're compromising on one or the other?
Always.
Aren't you?
Always.
It's so frustrating when you're doing it. It's like, damn it, you know, I'm just getting my fishing head on. I'm in the zone, you know, and then you got to worry about setting up for a shot or something. So It is a bit. It's a bit of a burden. I know.
honestly, it's what I worry about the most, because when I get back home after a trip like Prairie Banks, which is the biggest trip I've done so far,
yeah,
and I look at the footage, sometimes my blood boils, because I'm like, you were probably sitting down relaxing. You should have gotten another shot.
Right, right. but that's the director in us, that you know, you got to think. You're not just thinking from an angler perspective. You got to think, what's this going to look like through the lens, you know, and you've got to think about all of that stuff. I don't think, you know, and a lot of when it comes to filmmaking, and that actually brings me to the, you know, to the question that I ask you. I think one of the things that an angler has to think about when they're filming is they have to think from a viewer's standpoint. They're fishing, you know, and you can't just turn the camera on and document it. I mean, you can, but it's not, you know, incredibly interesting to watch. There's a hell of a lot of work that goes into it. So you have to start thinking from a viewer perspective on what the viewer is going to see and what you see, what you like to look at as an individual, you know, and start maybe, you know, approaching it from that perspective. So the sound you brought up, which is a really good point. Is there anything else, any other points that you'd bring up in terms of mistakes or challenges or things that people need to be wary about when they're trying to document a session outside of the sound?
Yeah. There's a bunch, but the biggest one that I see very often is exactly what you touched upon, which was from the viewer's perspective.
Yeah.
And nowadays with TikTok, with Instagram Reels, with all these quick attention grabbing content available, a lot of people tend to forget that if you don't grab someone's attention, or if you keep filming something that's not very interesting in you and it makes the final cut, you're going to lose so much viewership.
Yeah.
They're really just going to skip past, or maybe even just, you know, stop watching your video altogether.
Yeah.
And there's a happy medium there between, you know, too little of something or too long.
Yeah.
But I find at the beginning, a lot of people end up showing stuff that not that nobody cares or wants to see. It's just, it's a very small amount of people.
Yeah.
So you kind of cater to the majority if your main goal is getting views, mind you.
Yeah.
If you don't care about that and you make them for yourself, then, you know, go right ahead and do whatever you like.
Yeah. That's a really good point, actually, because I think in the world that we live in, with attention spans getting shorter, and there is an extreme. I mean, because there's some, you know, let's say carp documentation pieces that it's almost like going to a club and it's, you know, neon lights and house music and everything. It's just bam, 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 bam. And, you know, like for me, it's like, I can't watch that. And there's different styles too, isn't there? I mean, if you look at the old school style, like if you look at some of the old series of the European, like Passion for Angling and Chris Yates' stuff, and, you know, and it is really, you know, just nature and slow and this, that, and the other. It's there is a medium, and there are, but there are definite extremes. There are definite extremes. One of the other things I actually wanted to bring up that I noticed from myself initially with filming was moving the bloody camera. So it's really, you know, and you'll notice if you give the camera to somebody to, you know, especially if it's filming, they do have a tendency to want to move the camera. And as soon as you move the camera, you've got lens shake and everything else. So I think one of the other things is just, you know, get the camera, set it on a tripod and, you know, just, you can't, unless you've got a gimbal, you know, leave it there and have the action going on within the frame as opposed to moving the bloody camera around. Because when you come back to edit something and you've got an incredible, you know, you've got a moment, but the bloody camera's moving everywhere, that immediately takes your mind from the subject into, I feel like I'm going to throw up because the camera's moving everywhere. That's one of the other things. And that's why I asked you about the gimbal, because your stuff was so well shot that I presumed it was just tripod, gimbal, and that was it.
Yeah, and that's, and the other thing too is I've really taken this to an extreme. I have invested a lot of money, and it's, you know, no, you don't really need to. And it's difficult for me because I'm a perfectionist, and I know I don't need that lens. I don't need that. I don't need this. But I still get it because I'm a gearhead and I enjoy it and, yeah, and whatnot. If I was on a budget, I could do, you know, let's say 90% of what I do today for a tenth of the price.
Right. Right.
And that's amazing that we live in a time where you can get a $50 gimbal for your phone, and your phone already does 4K.
Yep.
And it's got all these cool features and tracking and all sorts of stuff.
Filters and everything now, you know.
Yeah, and you can hook up a mic, a Bluetooth mic, a relatively cheap one off Amazon or whatever, and you've got decent audio now, and you can film pretty much anything. And I think we see that now that, you know, especially with Instagram and everything, all these people are just using their phones.
Yeah.
And they're creating some pretty awesome video. And I don't know. I feel some people put a lot of accent on the quality of the video. Mm. When really it's what you're filming. It's the subject matter. It's the whatever you're filming, right?
Yeah, and that's where the director sort of part comes in. That's why we mentioned look at it from a viewer's perspective, because you can have all the best gear in the world, but if the subject that you're shooting, if there's nothing there to grab your attention, then, you know, and it is balancing all of that stuff up. I wanted to ask you in terms of your editing and everything, because now we've got an idea of, you know, the gear and stuff that you use. What do you edit all of this on, Paul? What program do you use, or what do you use?
So I use Premiere, Adobe Premiere, mainly because I do have a graphics design background. So I've already gotten used to the Adobe ecosystem.
Yep.
So it was quite an easy transition from Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign to Premiere.
Gotcha. And now you mentioned, obviously, you know, on phones, people can edit directly on their phone. There are things that they have. And, you know, I can't emphasize enough the importance for the future of the fish, because, you know, how you take a malign species and introduce it and make it popular is a lot of it is how it is presented, you know, and how it is presented to the public. So, you know, for all the anglers that are out there that have, you know, that haven't yet delved into documenting it, you've probably got in your pocket a decent enough amount of equipment to start doing it. And I just encourage everybody to just start taking stuff. And the great thing, because it's digital now, you don't have to wait for a bloody film to come back and find out it's out of focus. You know, you can delete it, you can shoot it again. You know, so I think it's important, the more that people can document, and we certainly support any of our members that have a, you know, that want to. I know it can be intimidating when you first get involved in it. You know, if you look at something, for example, on your level, Paul, and somebody going, well, heck, I can't do that. Or, you know, I think the big thing is just starting and shooting stuff and enjoying that part of it. Because I don't know about you, but I get as much fun, I get as much of a thrill out of the angling and the catching. I mean, it must have been incredible for you to go through all of that footage and see, because you've captured that moment, you know, you actually have that moment then from a historical perspective that you can capture and put into something. So there is a great deal of gratification that can come from the documenting side, even outside of the angling side, isn't there?
Oh, there's two parts to fishing now. It's going fishing and then coming home and seeing what you've captured,
yeah,
on video.
Yeah, because then you can share it to somebody else. You know, can't you? You can share it with other people.
Exactly. And I got to tell you, a bunch of my non-fishing friends watch my videos, and I've never in my wildest dreams thought they'd watch my videos.
Right.
You know, people who don't care about fishing altogether, like, are not, you know, inclined to watching fishing videos, they watch it and they say, you know, you treat them so well, and it seems like you're having so much fun, and it's like, it's so enjoyable to watch. And I never thought I'd hear that.
That's excellent. I mean, that's what it's all about, is sharing that passion, you know, that we have, through documenting it and being able to share it with others. And again, it was an incredible piece of work, Paul. I mean, when I saw it, I was like, this is the best piece of documentation on the sport in, you know, North America, Canada that I've yet to, you know, I've yet to see, yet to witness. So you definitely raised the bar for everybody, which was awesome. So big congrats on that. Now, let's talk about, obviously you guys are going to be shooting a part two. You can't have a session like that and just do one. So when are you guys going to go back for your next session?
So it's already planned. We're trying to keep it kind of under wraps a little bit, but yeah. It's gonna happen at the end of September.
Right. Awesome.
And it's going to be longer. So it's going to be more than 7 days this time.
Yeah.
We have, if the first one was great, the second one has the potential to become a lot better because there's multiple spots, different lakes. It's really getting expanded for the second part.
Excellent. And I bet the other guys are looking forward to it as well, aren't they?
Oh, they're buzzing.
Yeah, I bet they are. Now, let's talk about this year, because I know you've got some pretty special trips planned overseas. You know, we've been discussing you're going over to Europe for a few months, right? For some time. You'll be visiting some special lakes. I think my question is, outside of Lake Bled, which we have discussed, what other venues, Paul, do you think you're going to fish in? How long are you going out there for?
So I'm going for one of my best friend's wedding. Mm-hmm. He actually lives in Romania. We keep in touch, and he loves to go fishing as well. So we're not doing like a bachelor trip. We're doing a post-wedding, you know, 12 days of fishing trip.
Excellent.
So I will be going to fish three different countries, three different venues for 12 days total.
Can you tell us what they are?
So we'll be starting in Romania. There's a lake called Varlam near Bucharest, the capital. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the most beautiful venue I've ever been to. I absolutely am in love with this venue.
Have you fished it before?
I have. I fished it in 2019 for the first time. We went there for four nights.
Okay.
So I do have some experience there. And then we're going to be driving to our second destination, which we're not 100% on. We have a few options, but it will probably be in Croatia.
Right.
And from Croatia, we will be driving to Slovenia and end our trip in true Eurobank style. I mean, this trip I've been waiting to do for pre-pandemic times, and it's just been delayed. So after watching Eurobanks, I said I have to go there.
Yeah,
I have to experience it for myself once. Yeah. And so finally this year, everything's booked, everything's good to go.
Excellent.
And there isn't a day that doesn't pass without me thinking about it.
I was going to say, you're thinking about that every day, brother. I know you are, because if you've got something like that planned, I mean, there's so many things in your mind that you're going to be going through before you go out there. And because it would just be you and one other friend, you said, will be fishing?
Yes, it will be me and Adrian. So only two guys. And okay. I have to teach him to film, and he doesn't speak English very well, so it will be fun. It will definitely be a new challenge.
Well, we'll be looking forward to seeing the documentation of all of that. Obviously, if you're going to fish Lake Bled, there's some incredible fish in that venue. There's some incredible fish over in Europe, and you know, really, really happy that you're going out there, and we'll all be rooting for you, expecting some wonderful documentation of some of those monsters that you're going to catch.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention also, because you're a member of the Canadian Carp Society. And we're very close to those guys. They've done an incredible job up there spreading the word. and with some wonderful content, and hope that it continues for them to grow the community and everything. I did want to ask you though, because you've been an American Carp Society member. Why did you join the American Carp Society? Because I know when you joined, the Canadian Carp Society wasn't yet launched at the time. What was it about the American Carp Society that got you interested in joining, Paul?
To be honest, it looked like the type of group I would enjoy talking and socializing with. There are many carp groups out there, not to you know, discredit them or whatnot, but it seemed like the American Carp Society offered a more refined experience.
Right.
And so again, pre-pandemic times, I wanted to go to Dale Hollow. I wanted to go to Blackfoot. I wanted to go to all these different places. And I thought, well, who do I talk to? Because these are foreign to me.
Yeah.
And I really needed all the help I can get. And so that was the initial reason I joined. But then, I enjoyed everything else that came with it. My initial reasons were to just meet other people, and kind of help plan my trip in the States. But it's become more than that. I really enjoyed the interactions and everything that gets kind of everything that occurs really on the Facebook page. And obviously, the events haven't been as many because of the pandemic, but I'm looking forward to those as well.
That's great. That's great. And it's great, always great to hear from someone that, you know, the reasons why, to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to, you know, keep up the work that we're doing and to spread it out there. And again, you have, you've got a great eye for photography and filming, and we need as many people as possible, over here, you know, North America, Canada, that have a passion for getting behind the lens to shoot movies, share their work, spread the word. Because now with social media, you know, everybody has an opportunity to do something for the fish, which is really what we are all about. I mean, our whole philosophy is the fish is the star. It's not the angler that's holding the fish. It's all about the fish. Now, in regards to that, how do you think social media has impacted the sport over the last few years?
I think it's positive. I mean, I see that more and more carp anglers are popping up. Mm-hmm. So it seems like from my perspective that the sport is growing and there's a lot more respect for the fish. But again, I tend to not get all caught up in the negativity of it all. There's a two sides to it. And there's definitely some negative things that come with social media. I think overall, I think it's positive.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen a huge influx because of social media of people getting interested in the sport and the fish, which can only be a good thing. I think one of the things that we've seen too that is really brought together is a lot of the fly anglers. There's a lot of fly anglers that that fish for carp, that are heavy Instagram users, because it's obviously more picture heavy than, let's say, Facebook is, and more conducive of sharing that content through images. We've seen a lot of fly anglers coming together, and actually one of the biggest things from social media is seeing a lot of Euro style or traditional carp anglers, because of the interaction with the fly anglers, are wanting to try for them with fly gear. We've seen that a great deal over the past couple of years. So, you know, it's like anything. If you use it, you know, correctly with some common sense, I think the social media aspect is a big positive for the fish. Now, before we finish, what advice, Paul, would you give to any new anglers that haven't yet fished for carp, that, you know, are kind of showing an interest, or they're just getting into the sport? Any advice you'd give them?
I'd say go out and try it. Go out and to your local pond. I mean, most places hold carp now, or have been for some time.
Yeah.
Go out and try it and see like the experience, because I think the first time I had a 20 plus pound carp on the line, there were very little fish that I would think about afterwards.
Yeah. It changes the perspective on everything, doesn't it? I mean, it really does. An incredible fish, incredible species. And I want to thank you, Paul, for your time here today, because getting into not only the session that you filmed, but getting into how you filmed it again was really insightful. Well, that's about all we have time for today. I'd like to thank our guest, Paul Choker, for all of his help and time with this. If you have any questions for Paul, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you, to get in touch with you, if they want to talk gear and technical, anything like that?
Well, I'm obviously part of the American Carp Society, so you guys can search me up in there and reach me through Facebook. Also on Instagram, Team Carp Official is my username.
Yep.
And yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back the same time, same place this next month. So don't forget to join us. You can reach out to us here at the American Carp Society through Facebook and Instagram, Pinterest and Twitter. Tag us with your captures with hashtag American Carp Society and hashtag join the guilty ones, and we will feature you on the feed. You can contact me directly with any questions at Sean@AmericanCarpSociety.com. Be lucky.